we're also been, I guess, brainwashed in thinking that high volume, high organic styles of social is the route to success.
Today, I am super stoked to have my friend Michael with me.
You're not just competing against yourself these days when it comes to social.
Michael is a rock star.
You're competing against everyone in your category, against other brands, friends and family, or your brother's dog who you just took for a walk and he's all cute and mucky.
He has transformed social media for Ryanair.
Strategy is also about sacrifice.
Very keen to hear all about the method.
When people show up on social, they do two things.
Hi everyone, welcome to Unmatched. Today I am super stoked to have my friend Michael with me, and Michael is a rock star in social media. And if you don't know who he is, you should definitely Google Michael Corcoran, because he has transformed social media for Ryanair in the last few years. And I'm so, so excited to talk to you today, Michael. Welcome.
Thank you. I might have some elements of being a rock star, maybe throwing televisions out of windows, but I probably don't have the coolness of some of the good front men out there.
Well, let us be the judge of that for now. You know, we always start the conversation with a little bit of history of our guests. So let me ask you this. What's your story? For those of you that don't know who you are, and why do you do what you do today?
Well, it all started when I was four. No, what do I do today? That's a great question. I'm figuring that out. I'm currently managing partner of a new consultancy of sorts, which is called Frankly. And Frankly was born from, again, off the back of the work I did at Ryanair, the decisions I went to exit, and a lot of the common barriers, bugbearers, and problems that are happening in quite a fragmented and difficult space that is social media. And the best way I like to explain it is I try to get uncomfortably close with my brands and partners, try to give them the tools, the knowledge, and the processes to build something sustainable when it comes to how to use social media. I hand over the keys and I ride off into the sunset. My aim is to make myself redundant when it comes to working with my partners, because when you hear of consultants, you get kind of a bit of an ick, or, you know, the hairs climb up in your back, where most consultancies go in, they linger for as long as they can and take as much as your money for as long as they can. But I guess for me, it's the sign of a good consultant is the fact that you don't stick around for too long and you leave a legacy of doing something good. So that's essentially what Frankly is. And I'm on this journey of working through that at the moment. I've developed a 12-month program off the back of many conversations from marketing directors, CMOs, CEOs, agency leaders. When I did announce I was leaving Ryanair, it opened a lot of doors to a lot of conversations for me to figure out what to do. And the same common problems and themes occurred, and it validated even the work that I did at Ryanair to deliver what we did. And a lot of people would think that it's all about the flippancy and the humor and the execution, but there was a method to the madness, and it's that method of strategy and actually building an operation fit for purpose is what probably allowed it to be the success it was. And a little bit of luck too.
I am very keen to hear all about the method. That's why we're here today. I am so keen to hear about that method, because it does look like, you know, on the outside, to the untrained eye, it can seem to be a very random madness, as you called it, a little bit of a chaos. But to anyone who understands marketing today and social media today, I bet there was a very well thought through strategy that I want to know all about. Before we go into that, though, I wanna ask you, what was your kind of like journey to get into social media in the first place, and how did you land at Ryanair?
Oh, it's a great question. Funny enough, and I love telling this story. I started off probably any sort of decent career as a bouncer, a doorman, working in security at the door of nightclubs, believe it or not.
Amazing.
I was studying at the time, but it would have been my probably first adult job. But I studied health science. I had an ambition. First, it was farming. Then it was to be a vet, and I couldn't be a vet. I wanted to be a physiotherapist, and then I wasn't smart enough for that. So I studied exercise and health studies because I had a big passion into health and fitness. And as I was going through that course, I started to see that the opportunity to have a really good career was challenging, and my knowledge of physiology wouldn't have been the strongest compared to others. So I started to question what to do, but it was a good experience. It was good craft. But in my third year, there was a module in marketing that really probably was my first introduction to marketing, understanding the creativity of brands, the problems communications can solve. And it started to give me a bit of a grow and love for it. Now, again, I would have been naturally creative in my background. Again, creativity, public speaking and things like that would have been some of my stronger areas off the back of being dyslexic. So it was an interesting space that I probably naturally gravitated towards. I then went to go study a master's in marketing, where I continued to be a bouncer at night and study during the daytime. And then I started to try and climb the ranks. I begged, borrowed, stealed any sort of work experience or opportunity that I could, which started off in PR, believe it or not. It was probably just before social media was on the cusp of being something or being referred to as a form of marketing. And it was there I kind of got my early days of understanding, again, the principles of communication, some of the methods. Was I good at PR? Media relations, maybe. But again, the writing and dyslexia got in the way of, you know, dealing with journalists, and it became probably a bit of a question mark on my capability. I eventually left where I was and started to kind of go and hone my craft in more social specific roles in digital agencies. Spent about 6 years working in digital agencies, independent agencies in Ireland, again, growing quite fast. And again, the one thing I learned very quickly was, in order to climb the ranks quickly, you needed to get in and get out and develop and hone your craft in many ways and accelerate your career by moving through different businesses. And kind of within the space of 5 or 6 years, I went from being probably a social media executive to a head of social media in an agency, which is, again, quite fast, I guess, in career terms. Once I kind of felt I kind of reached my ceiling in agency side, which was challenging because brands knew they needed to be on social media. They didn't know how. They weren't willing to be brave enough or step outside or on anybody's toes in the way that I was trying to push them towards to think. I also was trying to figure it out as well, because I was mirroring and learning from others in the industry, thinking that that was the right way to do it, when it just became a challenge to win over and try and do it in a different way that nobody was willing to try. So I decided to go in-house and see, could I prove it elsewhere? Again, typical, you learn politics within business never really changes, no matter where you are. And depending on who's above or around you, it can become a challenge to convince, again, to do it the right way. People navel gaze at other brands. And funny enough, I was in a brand called Betfair at that time, an amazing, very successful sports betting brand. I spent 3 lovely years there working with some amazing people. But reorgs pushed me out the door and I went on my way. And about, say, 7 or 8 months later, I landed on the door of Ryanair with a license and a carte blanche opportunity to do something really special, to be empowered to actually put a strategy in place and actually build a team that could deliver on it. And the rest, I guess, is history.
History, yeah. Like social media history, literally, because everybody knows. I think everyone who is in marketing these days has heard about or has seen the amazing stuff that you guys have put out there from Ryanair. By the way, we haven't introduced the additional guest on the podcast, which our listeners, viewers can hear in the background. Maybe you want to do a quick introduction.
I don't know if she'll come in because she's just barking at probably strangers walking by the door. That is my gorgeous little girl, Sadie. Now, she may be one of many visitors, depending on what children come and say hello at some point, but we'll hopefully keep them all away. But Sadie is my golden doodle. She's my retriever poodle cross, and she's my best friend. And when you need to get away from a busy day in social media, there's no better person than to do that with Sadie and a lovely walk at night.
Well, we welcome Sadie as well to the podcast, and we're very happy to have her on. We'll go back to the conversation in a moment, but for now, I've got a game changer for your content strategy. Now look, the one question I'm being asked over and over again is, how do you manage to have a full-time job with all the responsibility that comes with and post content and record a podcast and keeping it all together? Now, no, I don't always have it together. But when I started all this, I did struggle until I discovered a tool that completely changed the game for me. So let me share. It's called Planable, and it's the best content planning tool out there. Now, Planable has been my content planning tool for a whole year now, but I was so excited when they reached out to sponsor the podcast. Now, picture this. I'm planning and crafting my posts, and I'm seeing them exactly as they'll appear live across all the different platforms I'm on, all from one single dashboard. I mean, mind-blowing. And you can easily collaborate with your team, get content approved in literally seconds. And that is the beauty of Planable. Now, you can head over to planable.io and sign up for a free plan today, and you will absolutely love it. You can trust me. And here's the cherry on the top. The lovely team at Planable is giving you now 30% off the first 3 months when you upgrade to any plan that fits your needs. All you need to do is use the code PLANNABLE30 at checkout, and you're all set to transform the way you manage your marketing content. So next time you wonder how I do it all, well, here's the real answer. I don't. I get help from Planable. So coming back to Ryanair, anyone who has been in marketing knows what Ryanair has done in terms of social media. And it has become the staple that everyone is talking about when referring to like the best way to do social media today for any kind of brand. So it's a total benchmark. Just referring to, you know, just some numbers, 2.2 followers on TikTok.
2.2, yeah.
About 70 times more than your competitors at EasyJet, which is crazy. And not only that, but it has become like a total personality even on TikTok. It's not even a brand anymore. It's like it's a real personality. It's someone that, you know, kind of speaks to you on a friendly term. So I would love for you to tap into a little bit the thinking behind this methodology and the strategy that you guys put in place when you started the Ryanair, and what was the thinking when you launched that?
Sure. Like when I came in, I had about 6 months of an opportunity to observe and figure out what was going on. And look, I'm very transparent and I'll never take credit for work that's never done. So as I unpack this, I'll always point towards the influences around it. Now, TikTok would have been up and running before I came into town. And it started off around COVID, when COVID became an absolute shit show for airlines and travel, and it meant that, you know, it was decimated, but it became this comfort blanket of a platform for many, many people. And the team at the time were just trying to figure it out. They had no travel to talk about. They were probably more busy issuing customer refunds than actually talking about travel. But they had a bit of freedom to figure out this platform called TikTok. And the one thing Ryanair was great at is it's moving fast and trying to solve problems. And they were allowed to experiment and figure it out. And there was a guy there, Andrew Mython, and then a few others came into town and took it over. And then we evolved it even more. But they discovered and they had the room to breathe and figure it out along the way. So there wasn't much strategy behind TikTok in its emergence, but there was a lot we took on board on top of other things to build a wider social strategy. But with the ability to test and learn, with the ability to be an early adopter, with the ability to play around with the platforms, again, they figured out a couple of things. They figured out a humanizing of a character on screen was a vehicle to try and actually grab people's attention. They were able to identify the ability that trends had an influence on, you know, discovery and reaching people beyond your following. And it was that method of identifying the trend and when to actually use it at the right time almost became the science for them to figure that out. And us consistently doing that over time gave us the advantage well beyond everybody else. But when it comes to the wider strategy, it was born out of four principles. And again, am I an expert strategist? Probably not, but I know basic frameworks and I try to apply thinking. When it comes to strategy, I like to do a couple of important things. I like to make sure that I try to identify problem or problems that the brand or business may have that I think social media can potentially solve. I try and answer those questions. I try to work it into an articulation of a strategy and build a set of guided principles around it to inform how we get to where we are now to where we want to be next. And they're not hard and fast rules, but they're things and pieces of fabric that needs to live through all the execution and all the tactics to try and make sure we're as close to solving consistently that problem or problems that we've unearthed through insight. And that insight was then kind of broken out across four variables. And I know variable sounds like a wanky word, but so I'll try and keep on dumbing it down. It was, again, I'm mansplaining here, brand, category, customer, and the social media landscape. So we would have dived into a lot of detail and a lot of insight across those four variables. We would have then looked at insights and maybe tried to think about them in a way nobody else has. And that's what's really good about strategy. Strategy is about identifying insight that maybe nobody has thought of, or a solution to a problem that maybe nobody has thought of in the category that maybe you can have a crack at. And it was the intersection of all that insight unearthed three problems. But before we get there, we distilled it down into four key insights. And like from a brand point of view, we looked at what was ownable by us. What is something that we could own that nobody else had? What was something that could be distinct about us that nobody else had? And that was really our tone of voice. And like people talk about our disruptive, unhinged, crazy, irreverent tone of voice that we had on the internet. But for many who actually know Ryanair, that wasn't anything new. That was something that was inherent from the CEO and the style of marketing done for many, many years. And it was something that we were recognized for. And like when you look at our CEO, Michael O'Leary, at the time, he would have used PR as a low-cost, high-return way of garnering as much attention as possible by saying and talking about topics and being very self-deprecating about the business in a way that nobody else would. So every time he spoke, he got headlines. So it would have been silly for us not to take the heritage and the DNA of what's been done and plug that in as a point of difference for the brand. Then when we look at other things as well, as back in 1985, Ryanair democratized travel. Like travel was a luxury. It was expensive for everyone. I'm based in Ireland and Ryanair again originated within Ireland. But to get from Ireland to London on a normal Aer Lingus or British Airways flight, it could have cost about £300 or £400 at the time. Ryanair came to town and became £50. And that meant we democratized and we opened up travel for all. And they disrupted the category completely. So it was that disruptor mentality and the DNA were the two kind of really important insights we brought into how we kind of figured out the strategy. Then we looked at the category itself. And when you look at the category, both on the platforms and as a whole, no matter what way you position it or shape it, and most of them did, was trying to make travel in a metal can 35,000 feet in the air a luxury, when it's not really. They try to then make it into an experience rather than the journey being the whole point of why you're there. And then they try to wrap it around these beautiful, stylistic, fake-filtered nature of aspirational travel that wasn't a reality. The reality is flying is stuffy and uncomfortable unless you fly first class, and not many of us can afford first class. So we took that and we went, okay, with our tone of voice and in the category, the same thing. And it translated into social as well, that they showed up and tried to then be aspirational, lovely palm tree shots, beautiful crew standing on the steps of a plane, the handsome pilot ready to welcome you on board. And it was just building something that wasn't real. So the two of those alone allowed us to stand out from the crowd and use that as a superpower. Then when you all layered under it, we had two other areas, customer, and then the social media landscape. And around customer, the biggest insight we took from it was people were grated or angry with the wrong perception over traveling low cost. And that has been driven predominantly by the millennial cohort. Because if you go back to what I said, the boomers or the older generation, they don't have a problem with Ryanair because we open up travel. They go to Malaga and they go to Barcelona, Madrid, and all these beautiful sunny places two or three times a year to top up their lovely wrinkly tans for very, very low cost. And they've been happy. They understand the trade-off and what they get with Ryanair. And then you have the Gen Zers. They don't have any money, but they want experience. So again, Ryanair, as a digital savvy, simple airline, catered to their needs. If they wanted to go to Napoli for a pizza and only had 20 quid in their pocket, they could probably end up doing it for that price and have the best time of their lives. But it was the millennial generation whose perception of travel, me, the big silver spoon in my mouth, the privileged generation.
I think I'm still a millennial. Sorry for that.
maybe millennial or Gen X. We don't know. I'm kind of on the fence. I might have a Gen X mentality, but maybe on paper I'm a millennial.
Yeah.
But it was this generation, the privileged generations, whose perception of traveling low cost was way above what the product or the exchange
messed
was.
Messed it all up.
Exactly. And they expected luxury travel with USB chargers, heated seats and a hot towel for an airline ticket that could have cost them £10. And there was something jarring about that we've went, okay, this is something we might need to try and fix.
Need to tap into.
Exactly. They don't understand the model. And if they do understand it, well, then their expectations are way too high that we need to try and change. And then the last piece of the puzzle was social. And again, social for such a long time was built upon this fake filtered sea of sameness, you know, real versus, you know, the Instagram world that was built by influencers and then corporate brands and then brands trying to be something they're not and showing out to be perfect and polished and lacked any relatability. And it made social to be this really shit place that brands could never win on. But then TikTok, as we said, came to town and it completely changed it. It made social again, whatever even that means. It just made it a place where people could show up and be themselves a little bit more. They could share and be dark and be open and be transparent and imperfect. And that was okay because that's what the younger generation are comfortable with. And we took that learning from it that we could show up and be ourselves and be a little bit more honest and self-deprecating based on our tone of voice and people will be happy with it. And then the other thing as well, this is again, I keep telling people, it's my ride or die. And if people don't think about this as the main reasons to use these platforms, we really need to think about it better or just don't do it at all. Now, again, I'll caveat. Is social a place for passive content? Yes, when you're actually in the passive mood to go watch that content. Is social and places like YouTube there for education? Of course it is. It's the second biggest search engine in the world. TikTok is even becoming bigger than that. But for the majority of when people are on social and consume social, they do two things. They're there for entertainment and they're there for escapism. And it's those moments of consumption are small bursts and pockets of discovery throughout their day, whether it's on their commute to work, whether it's in lunch at work, or whether it's in the bathroom having a sneaky binge on their mobile phone when on the toilet. We all know people are guilty of that too. It's those moments, even parents, when they're after having a crazy day, they'll binge on social while it's pretending to watch Netflix with their partner.
Definitely guilty, yes. Yeah.
And you end up just sharing each other messages of funny, relatable content of how tough it is being a parent
on the same sofa,
doom scrolling and watching Netflix. And it's these moments that it's when people show up on social. And that's the place you need to probably be delivering. And if you're not entertaining or you're not being relatable to the chaos that's going on in everybody's lives, you're going to have a difficult time trying to cut through any sort of a message and people will just scroll by. Because what we need to remember is you're not just competing against yourself these days when it comes to social, because again, it's tough enough trying to get social right with all the pressures of every department in a business trying to show up there as well. You're competing against everyone in your category. You're not only competing against other people in your category, you're competing against other brands, other creators, friends and family, your sister's brunch pictures in you know, Shoreditch in London, having her bottomless mimosas and her eggs Benedict, and she's taking that picture, or your brother's dog who you've just took for a walk and he's all cute and mucky. That's what you're competing with in these news feeds. And if you're not trying to match that energy or try to cut through in the way people are doing it, it's a very difficult place to play. So all of this, we tossed into our salad and we found three problems. We need a low-cost, high-return reach because as a marketing team in Ryanair, we don't have any budget. So like the PR of all, we needed to cut through. And we had a DNA and a voice to be a disruptor. And that's one of the main ways you can cut through effectively, organically on these platforms. The second, people were tired of the fake filtered nature of social media that corporate brands and others have broken. We wanted to answer and solve that by being a tonic on the platforms by being self-deprecating, by being honest about things that were happening in the world and about ourselves in a way that actually entertained people. And the third one, which was probably upon reflection and looking at the strategy, probably the only problem that should have been in there, those other two were probably more tactical things that we needed to solve, was people's perception of flying Ryanair were way too high. And we needed to change that
perception. Lower expectations.
Lower expectations, decrease friction, and get them to understand the operating model in a way that they could understand. And again, as I said, which again, we were never allowed to probably put it into our brand surveys, was find how many people would hate Ryanair less on the internet. And it was that then we put into our strategy and tried to unpack. And the strategy itself then was born from those three answers to those three problems. And we looked at then, how do we do it? We looked at the landscape, how people were doing, the influence of the creators and the low-fi, low-filtered nature. And we said, okay, if we need to show up, we need to act like a human and become a character. So the strategy was we created a creator-led approach to how we use the platforms. We characterized the brand, which was Ryanair. And we did two things. We tried to look for relatable and topical moments to insert ourselves into, to either directly or indirectly connect us to get spikes of reach and success. And secondly, then we developed an always-on approach where it was the lever to continuously chip away and change the perception of flying low cost, and particularly flying with Ryanair. And again, I'll use the Gary Vee quote, jab, jab, right hook.
Yeah,
every time we landed a big right hook of viral reach and content where we disrupted, we got people's attention across multiple platforms. And all we know about these algorithms are that if you reach people, a bunch of high engaged users, it's normally going to carry it to low engaged users. Again, great win for the business because that's who we need to switch on. But what it ended up doing was it allowed us to create a small window of opportunity that every time somebody did see a piece of that reactive content, it allowed us our content to either show up or similar content on the platforms. But in most cases, when ours did, we had to ensure that always on messaging, that perception change messaging, was equally entertaining and cut through like reactive in a way that gave them a giggle and an understanding first, but also had a very important message that we needed to deliver to, again, change that perception time after time. And it was that jab, jab, right hook time after time that took our reach higher, took our foundations higher, and inevitably grew our, I think, our overall reach or impressions to 2 billion in 18 months. And again, yeah, that's excluding God knows how much PR or media.
That's
we
really, really impressive. I mean, it's pretty amazing what you guys achieved. And I wanna stop a little bit and unpack on this, because I just feel like this has been like a total masterclass on social media strategy right here. I feel like people are gonna take this and try to replicate it or something. But I wanna go back to the beginning of your explanation, because I think you said something there at the beginning that I picked up on that I think is crucial for this conversation, which is you said that, you know, the heritage of the brand and the tone of voice, which were already there because of the CEO who was always acting and speaking in that way, was what enabled you guys, what gave you the carte blanche to actually, you know, build on top of that and create this personality on social media that kind of replicated that same, you know, that person. And I think that not enough people understand the importance of authenticity when you do this, right? Because you can't, I mean, if say the previous strategy would have been like we're the nicest and everything is perfect and we always speak nice to our, you know, to our stakeholders externally, internal, and, you know, there's this kind of like very preppy way of dealing with everything. Would you have been able to execute or to come up even with this new strategy? It would have been a big leap from where that was probably initially. So I'm just thinking that there must be something there that speaks about the fact that you, whatever strategy you put on social media needs to kind of build on what the brand already has so that it just kind of like spikes the authenticity and shows the brand in a different way.
Yeah, like it was easy because we weren't reinventing the wheel. It was easy to get permission because we weren't doing it any way different. And the business was known to be a disruptor, known to be polarizing and not afraid to get off the fence. And there was actually tension in actually doubling down on this. And again, we knew the business would buy into it, but actually there was other people within the marketing department that didn't believe that. They thought, no, this is not how you do branding. You need to be fluffy and warm to your customers. You need to watch. But if we tried to show up and do that, we were would have been called and people would have smelled bullshit a mile away. So it was easy for me to understand. And I guess this is probably why I was brought in, because I got the business and I was able to apply it in a very easy manner. But again, it's probably where brands go wrong, because they're trying to be something they're not all the time. And I don't think they're learning enough to actually be true to themselves, because, you know, the audience and customers aren't stupid. You know, they can smell washing a mile away and they can smell when something is not right. And it's probably a reason why so many aren't really winning in this space. So for us, it was easy, but it didn't come as easy at first until we had our first couple of, I guess, golden moments. And even those golden moments caused a lot of, I guess, tension in the team as well as to whether this was still right or wrong. Because again, people were shocked by how we were showing up and behaving, especially people who weren't familiar with the brand. So yeah, it was, what I understand is we were lucky. We had a privilege to do something a lot of people can't do at the moment and right now. And the fear of what we've built and what we created at Ryanair was, when they look at what we do, and like, again, I'm very humbled by the comments you made earlier, and I'm always humbled by the commentary and the reviews and the case studies of the work that we did at Ryanair. But we understand that we had a privilege that a lot of other brands and businesses don't, in having the ability to develop a really strong strategy that was right for the brand, having the license to do it and the autonomy to do it, and then making sure we built a team that was actually fit for purpose and didn't come from this copy paste mentality that a lot of social brands are doing at the moment.
But still, I mean, it's not, I think I want to talk to you a little bit about this topic, because you say, you know, like, not all brands have the license to do this. Well, not all brands should be doing this, because not all brands sit in the same categories, in the same space. Not all brands have this kind of tone of voice that they should be tapping into. But what are the crucial aspects of being authentic on social media and successful, not just authentic, successful with what you do on social media, no matter what your brand is, no matter if it's luxury or entry level, no matter what the category is? Like, what are the main principles, in your opinion, that brands should, you know, look at if they want to be successful on social media these days?
I think it goes back to the strategy. Like, it goes back to, why are you showing up there in the first place? What problem or what opportunity is the platform's providing? We all know the opportunity social has based on the amount of users and the amount of people on these platforms. But for some reason, we all feel that we need to be delivering it in a certain way that has been prescribed for years, to be this nice, you know, happy international pancake day style brand, that's the way to deliver on these platforms. We're also been, I guess, brainwashed in thinking that high volume, high organic styles of social is the route to success, where there are multiple ways to deliver. So beyond trying to be authentic, you need to have a purpose, I guess, to be there in the first place. Not all brands probably even need to use social, like, in most cases, if they don't know why they're showing up. And it seems to be quite a forceful way that is maybe having more impact on the brand than success in the brand. But yeah, it goes back to why you're showing up in the first place, having a reason to be there, and then actually using the platforms in the right way to be as upfront, as honest, and as true to the brand. And again, that all depends on the brand's values, the brand's positioning, and where it is going, in order to try and reach the audience you want to reach. And again, that can be broken down into many ways. That can be organic, that can be paid, that can be partnerships or working with creators, but it doesn't have to be all of it. Like, again, you can be on these platforms without being on these platforms, and you can find multiple ways to solve it and show up. It's hard to answer, again, without talking fluff, what authenticity means. I think it's about having a reason to be part of the platform, to use it to solve a problem, and then do it in a way that is actually genuine. And if it's not, well, then you probably need to question why you're there.
Yeah. And I think that maybe what brands tend to struggle with, from what I've seen, is that they're not really clear on who they actually are. So if they would be a person, how would they look like? What would they say? How would they act? And I think it's this personalization of the brand that actually is what gets you to be successful on social media today. And, you know, tapping into culture, into the culture and to how consumers actually speak in your category online, you know, using the same phrases, the same words, the same way of expression, and almost like being the mirror of your audience on social media. I think that's, in my opinion, kind of like the aspiration, which not a lot of brands get, because they tend to fall into the fluff, as you call it.
Yeah. And again, I try to use a shift in mentality to be less aspirational and more relatable. And that can be unpacked in many ways. And yes, characterizing a brand and having a tone or showing up is definitely one way to do it, but not everybody needs to do it in that shape or form. You could find creators like-minded to the brand that, again, to the language you use, which is a great representation, is being a mirror reflection of the audience you're trying to reach and using them in a way to get salience or cut through. Or it could be very good paid advertising where, again, the protagonist or the character within it represents who you're trying to reach with very relatable, compelling messages. I think where you're going to is right. It needs to be a reflection of relatability. It needs to be something that then is a reflection of the audience, and tapping into then a number of different truths that people can relate to, whether that's human, consumer, you know, category, you know, or cultural truths that then layer a stronger connection as to why you're showing up in the first place, in order for people to stop and interact with the messages you're trying to share with them.
And the interesting is that throughout, you know, the recent decades, this has actually happened all along. So brands have interacted with their audiences in different ways, like whether it was through, you know, entertainment, music in the 80s, you know, rap, kind of mid to end of the 80s. And then all of a sudden, social media seems to be such a struggle because we're like, it's exactly the same. You're just mirroring, you know, the audience of the time that you're living in. So instead of, you know, kind of like you allow your brand to evolve with your audience and to be where your audience is. So if they were on the streets in the 80s, like dancing in the streets and, you know, playing to rap music, now they're on social media. So you kind of like just follow them.
It's such a good point because, like, again, take the Ryanair example. We took the form of marketing or communications that was inherent and part of what Ryanair did for many years. And we found a way for it to manifest and come to life in social media. You know, and it's such a great point that even like when you hear terms like influencer marketing as this new shiny method of using an ambassador or a spokesperson for your brand, that's been around since the early 1900s where forever, when marketing was a thing and endorsements and sponsorships were a thing, again, it just evolved to be how is it used on social? You found more people who had, let's say, influence or clout, who were more affordable to more brands to use, that became a good vehicle. But that's ambassadors, you know, that hasn't changed. And it even goes to the point of, I saw somebody write about it last week and I can't remember who, and it was such a great point. It's just like you see people complaining about the likes of Ryanair and Duolingo being these crazy unhinged brands that the day of unhinged marketing or social media needs to stop. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like that has been around for years too. Brands have been disrupted in TV, in radio, in out of home, and they've been unhinged for many, many years. If you think of a UK drinks brand called Tango, they had this guy painted orange who used to run around in their creative, slapping people with orange chickens and orange feet. There's brands across the UK who've been there for decades doing crazy, unhinged things with mascots and, you know, disrupting life in ways that the exact same thing is happening on social. But for some reason that, oh, it's a bunch of kids doing really stupid things on the internet, where it's really just an evolution of what everyone else has been doing in marketing that's either making marketeers or people scared or uncomfortable, but they're really not thinking about what's evolved.
Yeah, exactly. And especially what's coming, because I think this is where the biggest danger for brands is right now. If they don't see that this is just another step in that evolution, and there's going to be something else, you know, it used to be newspapers or magazines, then it used to be, you know, like music videos and on MTV and integration of products and brands everywhere. Now it's influencer marketing on social media, and then it's TikTok and TikTok Shop. What's next? And if you're not able to keep that going, you're going to kind of, you know, stay behind.
It's so true. It's just evolution. But yet, I think there's just this big tension between traditional and digital, and it's become a pain. Because again, you make such good points. You go back to the 50s and 60s where TV ads were, or even was it the 40s where there was no such thing. There was sponsored TV shows. Then this guy got the idea, well, we could make more money by breaking that sponsored TV show down into 30-second spots and sell those spots for a lot more money. And then TV ads came to town. Then you had MTV, where punk rock and all these disruptive musics in the 80s came and evolved. And people were like, you know, this is wrong. Culturally, this is going to kill the children. But it didn't. We evolved. It was just evolution of music, evolution of technology, evolution of life. And it's such an important point that, you know, that's all that's happened here. But again, whether it's fear or people who really haven't thought about it properly, it's no different to what people have been doing. It's just evolved.
Absolutely. Now tell me what you're set out to do with Frankly. You know, after everything that you've achieved at Ryanair, which has kind of, you know, put this major spotlight on you, and obviously having learned so much out of this experience, what is next for you personally, and what is next in terms of what you want to achieve in the space with Frankly?
I want people to think about how we can use these platforms better. And I guess it's a big job I have to do of showing that Ryanair was an exception and not the norm. It's not how everybody should show up, but there is thought and method behind it that was right for that brand or business. And I'll tell you something that was really interesting, so that really probably has pushed me more to do what Frankly's representing right now, is I've done keynote speaker events for the last couple of years off the back of the work we've done and people curious to how we do it. And I always ask this question, and it's why Frankly probably was constructed in the first place. I asked people in a room, and this ranged from a room of 800 people in the beautiful city of Ljubljana in Slovenia, right down to a group of marketing directors in Dublin of 50 people. I asked them how many people have a documented social media strategy on a page, not a list of tactics, not what formats you use, not what channels you use, because that's, let's call that creative strategy or channel strategy, or let's drill it down another level. It's tactics. But what problems are you solving with the platforms? And how are you going about it? Nobody in the room in Dublin put their hand up to say they had an actual documented strategy. And three people in a room of 1,800 put their hand up. And that really scares me, because there's brands doing really fun and exciting work on these platforms. But normally they are brands who have a lot of budget. So even with simple tactics, they're able to really overpower with really good spend and investment. But my journey is trying to make people think more strategically, to show them that there's more than one way to use the platforms. And if you make decisions, informed decisions about how you do it, and build a team to do it consistently, you may have a chance of actually doing something good. And equally, it's also about sacrifice, because that's the other big point I tried to drill into people. Strategy is also about sacrifice. And these platforms become the biggest dumping ground for messages everywhere. Does it actually have any impact? Probably not, but it looks great as a screenshot and a presentation for everyone to report back to their boss. But it's also about deciding what not to do and to actually be brave enough to do that. And like, not a lot of people are able to, because there's this disconnect between social media and senior level people. They're aware of the platform's potential, but they don't really understand what's it really doing for the brand or business. And that's the majority, not the some who do it really well. And what happens is the tension is created by the junior social media professionals giving out that the old grumpy people in the C-suites are don't get what we're doing. And that's partly true. The C-suite people, they actually don't understand it, because again, they're not on it all the time. And they're like, oh, but we know it's big. Let's give them some budget and some resource and let them go over and play. And we know we're solving our social. What I think needs to be done, and it's again, what I'm trying to do, is going in as somebody who wants to get very close to brands, is I want to talk to the decision maker. I want to take them on a journey to understand, both the junior people and the senior people, how you can communicate and understand the opportunity that is here. And it starts with the strategy. It is actually showing that we can solve something for the brand or business if we take it in a certain direction. And we haven't really earned the respect of the C-suite, in my opinion, just yet, to actually show the opportunities these channels provide. And that's what I want to try and do as well. And then once we get all that buy-in and show some sort of signals impact, see how we can scale it and do it better over time.
I think you make such a good point, because there's such a big disconnect in between what strategy stands for versus tactics and objectives. Like, for me, those are the three things: strategy, tactics, objectives. And very often people just mix them up. And they think strategy is tactics and, you know, objectives are tactics or something like that. No, they're not. They're different things, and you need to plan for all of them. And I think that what you just said struck a chord, because social media is such a young, you know, category or vertical within the business, with very young people having stepped into it, maybe not strategic enough or not experienced enough to present things in a way that senior management can literally understand how this whole thing works and what this does for the business. Because let's face it, probably the majority of the C-suite, you know, nowadays are not on social media as much as we would like them to be. And, you know, it's fine. But then I think it's also a responsibility for the social media teams and for the marketing teams overall in the community to explain in a better way what this is all about.
Completely. But I really, and again, there are some amazing people out there, but I don't think we do a good enough job at that just yet. The people I see talking all the time, talking absolutes, when that's not true. Social is not black and white. And anybody who does say that is trying to sell you something to buy off them to learn their tactics. The other thing then is, like, we have to teach people about this better. And again, I'm not the greatest at strategy, but at least I'm trying to put structure and trying to figure it out. There are far greater strategic people out there, but I want to go on a journey to make it better. And until we do that, because nobody is going to know these platforms better than the younger generation right now. And you even see it within the social media professional industry, the senior people who give out about the unhinged Gen Z generation. And I'm like, you just don't get it. You're not helping them, and they're not understanding the timeless truths of marketing that we need to impart on them to actually apply it with the beautiful minds that they have, and understanding how to unpack and pick these platforms apart to find really interesting ways to use them. So, like, that's such a frustrating place, because you have people who are 10 years or more in this industry who are getting frustrated that the C-suites won't give them the respect. They don't earn the respect. And then you've got people below them, the younger generations, who are ill-informed. And yes, they're making mistakes because they're not trying to think about it through the lens of communication. And it's about coming together, trying to figure this out and being better strategic thinkers, is we'll probably end up solving half the problems that are going on, and probably unlock so much more potential to use these platforms, because they're not going away. They're evolving. There is going to be more spend, but quite frankly, right now, it's really poor spend by many people, where they could be doing a hell of a better job.
Yeah, and I feel like this is a never-ending conversation. So I feel like we can kind of end our conversation here today, but we need to do this often, Michael, you and I, because I think that 6 months from now, if we talk again, there's going to be something new. And in 12 months, there's going to be a whole different landscape. So the conversation just needs to keep going and just kind of share with the community also, you know, at large, what those changes are and what the different mentality or the different mindset and the different methodology needs to be at every point in this social media journey. So thank you so much for your time today. I feel like it's been, you know, definitely a masterclass for everyone, including myself, to listen to you. And I cannot wait to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, I'd love it. And please, I don't know if it's a masterclass. I think it's just, again, like my mom used to say at home, a little bit of cop on mixed with a little bit of marketing. But again, I do my best. And again, I love speaking to people like you and others who not only celebrate good thinking, but also challenge it too. And again, the more people who challenge me, the more I challenge others. I think it's just going to be a better reflection on how we grow in these platforms more and do better work.
We definitely need more challengers in this space, that's for sure. So with that being said, Michael, thank you. And we'll speak soon.
Thank you very much. Take care.